listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. Matt Wilhelm, your host, Andrew Gribble, here in the Dog Bowl, live in Berea. We've got full phones. You guys want to say your piece, so we're going to go right to it. We are going to go to our first caller. Give it to me, Gibbsy. My man, Stan!
How are you doing?
Good, man. How are you?
Thanks very much for taking my call.
Sure.
Is Nason out there honing up his golf game?
He is. He is in Florida with the family, enjoying some well-deserved time off.
Well, that's good. You know, I'm trying to slow down my swing speed so I can compete with him.
Yeah, he's very good.
I don't think that'll ever happen at 71 years old, so that's past history.
Sure.
The one rule that I would change, and the only one, is the point after, the extra point.
Yes.
I'd make that lengthier. The idea of narrowing the goalpost, there's a lot more that goes into a field goal than an open-air field or a closed field, whether snap, hold, to narrow the goalpost, that just gives people like Billy Cundiff the ability to come back into football.
You are not the largest Billy Cundiff fan.
Never. Never.
Gotcha. You know what? You know what, Stan? That's a great point. And when you talk about, you know, I voiced Adam Vinatieri was someone who spoke out against a rule, you know, simply what he felt as if was against kickers in general to change their rules. That is a good point. You know, you look at the AFC North. Pittsburgh, tough place to kick. Cleveland, tough place to kick. Baltimore, so-so. Cincinnati, sometimes a tough place to kick as well. But then you look at teams like, you know, Arizona, San Diego, Adam Vinatieri there at Lucas Oil Stadium, guys that play inside 50, as good as they are in most cases, won't have a problem with that change. But that would be a significant change. I mean, a matter of feet, of 1 foot on each side, so 2 feet total, you move those goalposts, and it makes a big difference.
Yeah, and that would, especially at a place like Cleveland Browns Stadium, at First Energy Stadium, you know, it's just like, I think Billy Cundiff, when he was with the team near the end of last season, he talked about how he talked with Vinatieri. And Vinatieri came up to him and asked him, you know, how do you do this every week? Just kicking in an environment like this, the winds are swirling. And if that rule was enacted where the goalposts were narrowed, that would really become a part of the game. I mean,
yes.
That would really affect the game and really affect some late decision making. It would maybe change how you think approach maybe a fourth and manageable from like the 30-yard line. It would really alter that. And maybe if that's what the NFL wants, go for it. Make it kind of almost like each home stadium is almost like a baseball stadium where it's got its unique quirks and things like that. And that would really come into play with a narrowed field goal. But I just don't see that happening. The fact that we play these Super Bowls in kind of these controlled environments, to me, so shows me you want to go in the opposite direction. You want to make everything more normal. It seems like in sports, we look at the NCAA tournament now. All these courts look exactly the same.
Yep.
They've eliminated that sort of thing. So we're as a sports society, we're more going to the opposite end. So I couldn't see that coming into play.
Great point. Let's get our next caller, John in Dallas, with another rule change idea.
First off, I think Stan is proof that volumes are now taken for speed.
That's true.
I'm going to speed it up because Stan slowed it down.
No worries.
Well, I think it'd be cool if long field goals, you could put a big dude back there to block it. And also, I pray for the day when actually college changes the game a bit and pushes the hash marks closer together to get a better brand of quarterback. Thanks.
That's a great point, and that is you know what? A lot of people don't really think. They look at the college football game and how in which it's played, and from a production standpoint, from a spread offense standpoint, and then you look at, you know, transitioning into the NFL, and a lot of fans don't understand that a different in hash mark, you know, that, what, 5 or 7 yards, whatever it is, it's an entirely different game.
Yeah, from your perspective defensively, what is the big difference there?
Well, the big difference is you have to, in the NFL, you have to be able to run sideline to sideline in a lot of cases because those hash marks are in so far, you know, that and in most cases, the balls, you know, if you want to run wide, you can run wide whenever you want, which makes for a linebacker or safety or a defense in general that has to be able to run laterally sideline to sideline, whereas, you know, when you're on one hash mark, the an offense's ability to run a play into the boundary, you know, is very, very small. They're going to use that field because that field equals space. So they're going to throw that way. They're going to put trips to the field. They're not going to put – you can't put trips into the boundary because you have three guys in a line right next to each other. So in some cases, it's the process – and I talk about this from a defensive standpoint. It's the process of elimination. When a team lines up based on where they are on the field, what hash mark, middle of the field, wherever, the down and distance and the formation or personnel group they're in, you can eliminate a number of plays so you can get a general understanding of what they like in those situations, and you play to their strength. And in some cases, it's a guessing game, and you're playing percentages that you study all week long. Let's go to our next caller, our man Chevy in New Jersey. What's up, Chevy?
Hey guys, thanks. There's a book I hope that Johnny is reading called Evolve Your Brain by Joe Dispenza. It teaches you how to imagery. He could be playing football in the evening through meditation and get just as much as full practice on the field. Now, that's not why I called them.
I think I just wrote down that book. I need it myself.
Yeah, well, I think you should email me, and I'll email it to you. I got it free online. But here's what I think. The producer made a good point when he said we need O-line, D-line, and wide receiver. I was always thinking wide receiver. But I'm thinking if we got Shelton and Lael Collins, that would make us a dominant team. And we could build a wide receiver. We could develop one. That's all I got. Thanks for your patience, guys.
Appreciate the call, Chevy. And I know I'll respond first is I would love to go get both of those guys, but I don't feel that we're talented enough at the skilled position level to be able to score the type of points that you have to score to win football games in the NFL. I'll let you go, Andrew.
I'll speak just kind of on Lael Collins because I think he's, of the offensive line prospects that are in the first round, I think he's the most intriguing for a team like the Browns because he has the capability and already has shown the ability to play both guard and tackle well. And I think that gives you the ability to provide competition at some of the at multiple spots. And I think you get identified at some point in the process. The coach is like, well, we want you to compete at this guard position or at this at tackle. And that kind of gets them groomed and ready to go. Like you look at Joel Bitonio last year. He played college as a tackle. Browns identified him as a potential left guard. He slides right in and produces at an elite level. So I think that's what makes him intriguing. I just don't know. I know mock drafts keep putting the offensive lineman with the Cleveland Browns, and I just don't know. I like the situation with an under-the-radar guy like Michael Bowie coming back into the mix last year. And when Mike Pettine was asked about offensive line at the combine, he spoke pretty confidently about it because if you look at all the issues the Browns had on offense near the end of the season, offensive line really wasn't the big one, except obviously the loss of a center, which you're getting back with Alex Mack being healthy.
And you know why I wouldn't hate, you know, Collins from LSU, and it is because I think, as Ray Farmer has talked about many times, and it's proven at every level, you know, even from youth football, competition brings out the best in others. So if John Greco and Mitchell Schwartz in some cases have maybe gotten comfortable in their roles and have leveled off, you don't think that drafting a number one overall pick, a first round pick, and putting him in their room and having him be either a guard or a tackle is going to push those guys to maintain their role as a starter in the National Football League?
Oh, look at what it did to Buster Skrine last year.
Absolutely, absolutely. And so that, all in all, if we have that luxury, it would not be a bad thing. Let's go to our next caller, Al in Mansfield. Al, you there? Al, going once, going twice. Al, call back if you can. Gibbs, can you pot up John in Beachwood?
Hey, what's up, guys? How you guys doing today?
Hey, John, how are you?
Good, all right. My one rule change or my one rule tweak would be the illegal contact, the defense illegal contact. Either take it out completely or eliminate it being an automatic first down. Because you'd have an offense at 3rd and 12, and you have a wide receiver going out for, you know, 15-yard in pattern, and you have defensive contact, and then you have a 5-yard penalty and an automatic first down. And I do understand it's an offensive league, and they want to see points, they want to see scores, so they're going to try to screw the defense as much as possible. But at the same time, I just think it would help speed up the game because you would have a lot less of those flags. And I just think it would help, you know, the offense, you know, because they can – well, it helped the defense a little bit better because then they can actually contact the guy 10, 15 yards down the field if the ball's not in the air.
Yeah, you know, I kind of agree in the sense that Why is it a 5-yard penalty? What is the justification for automatic first downs with certain penalties? I guess that's if it's only a 5-yard penalty and that doesn't equal a first down, why in that particular situation
I think in a lot of cases it's because the over the top breaking of the rule prior to the rule, guys were getting abused, you know, after 5 yards, which is why they wanted to go from, you know, letting them play to extremely tight. You know, and that's why in some cases the NFL referees, groups of them are spread throughout training camps, and they actually visit training camps to help implement new emphasis on rules or new rules so that these guys can start practicing within the rules that they will have to abide by once the preseason and regular season starts. But he's right, and to be very honest, it is an offensive league, and Roger Goodell knows that. It sells tickets, it sells jerseys, it sells parking passes, hot dogs, and beer. And in most cases, they want points on the board, and they know that if they have their talented wide receivers running free for 5 yards, in most cases, they're going to catch the football.
Mm-hmm.
So that is something that we have to deal with. It is break time. So, again, continue to call in, 216-578-0850. Weigh in on any topic we've touched on so far, the NFL rule changes you'd like to see. Our guy Alan Mansfield, call back if you can. Tweet the show, @Browns_daily. We're going to hit some tweets after the break. You're listening to Matt Wilhelm, Andrew Gribble, live from Berea in the Dog Bowl at Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford.